Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by Committee-to-Elect Matt Shea Republican, and in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action, and as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And I got to tell you something, this political season, a lot of people are trying to find the ancient path. They're trying to find the good way and walk in it, and it's incredible the number of well-qualified, phenomenal, actually, candidates we are seeing across the state. And I'm gonna talk about a couple today, but it's really been really encouraging to me to see that many folks getting involved finally and saying, you know, enough is enough. Enough is enough. We gotta stand up. And these folks blow your mind with their credentials. I mean, blow your mind with their credentials. So we'll get to that here in a second. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front, Venezuela. And I want to talk about Venezuela very quickly because finally the mainstream media has picked up this story, specifically the New York Times. And here's the quote in the article from I think it's a law student down there in Venezuela. Quote, "The economic situation of this country is collapse," end quote. And the reasons given in the article, this is the New York Times, folks, you got to remember that. The reasons, poor fiscal management, having too much government interference in small businesses, continuing to print money to get out of debt, at least that's implied anyway. And what we're seeing happen down there, and the disconnect, people over the last 5 years, particularly in the media, have had in regards to this subject is just amazing. It's astounding. So they're literally giving the problems that led to this collapse in Venezuela, which is exactly what's happening here in the United States. Now, here is more. In that article, they specifically say there is electricity and water rationing, dramatic food shortages, government shutdown, the inability for people to bathe for weeks, not days, folks, weeks, civil unrest, violence, and even the denial of an election, specifically in regards to a referendum from the opposition. They're denying the ability of the opposition to hold that referendum election. And that is happening right now, not very far away from our borders, folks. It's happening here in this hemisphere. And some of the stories down there are, I mean, you know, they're sad. I mean, they're really sad. People are suffering horribly because government couldn't be fiscally responsible, and they literally ran out of money to print more money. You heard that right. They literally ran out of money to print more money. And this could happen here in the United States. Folks, it should underscore for every single person listening that you should be prepared. And listen again, they haven't had the ability to bathe for weeks on end. The water is not purified, and it's being rationed. And there's violence and looting, etc. Government troops, a couple reports of government troops going into apartment buildings and shooting anyone they thought was a protester. So all these people that have said this could never happen, it's happening in Venezuela, which was considered a developed country, especially in its bigger cities, because of the oil revenue that was being brought in there. And so all those people that said this couldn't happen, it's not going to happen, and here it is. It's happening in a country very close to America. I think they lose all credibility, at least in my mind. And I think people should stop listening to them and do what the American thing is, and that is become self-reliant. God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving Americans. Which brings us to the national front. And more disaster. Texas, the floods down there are horrific. They're biblical. The Brazos River down there crested over 54 feet. 54 feet. I don't even know. I mean, folks, I mean, that's taller than a lot of buildings in downtown Spokane. I mean, understand what that means. It's biblical. So please keep them in your prayers down there specifically. But secondly, another clear reason to be self-reliant. Massive floods. You never know when it's going to happen. And as we know up here, wildfires. And we're going to talk about that later today, which brings us to the next point on the national front and the public land transfer debate, which is happening and picking up a lot of steam, that we need to transfer the control of lands back to the states where it belongs constitutionally. And the federal supremacists, those who want centralized control of government, who say that the government's got to run everything, who completely forget the entire arguments that occurred at the founding of the country, where they said that the states created the federal government with limited and defined powers, not the other way around. Gaining a lot of steam to the extent that Donald Trump has finally come out and said that he would not only transfer the land back to the states, but he would pardon the political prisoners in jail right now. And that is very encouraging to me. If he keeps his word, that is very encouraging to me, and it should be to all of you. A little discouraging on the national front, 43 Republicans betray our wives and daughters and uphold Obama's transgender bathroom rule. And one of those Republicans, I was shocked to learn, was Justin Amash, who I hold in very high regard. I still don't know why he did that. I'm going to have to find out. But every one of those Republicans, if they're that tone deaf on this issue, I really think that they're no longer upholding the Republican platform. They're no longer upholding what it means to be Republican. They're not longer holding and protecting what it means to be an American, what it means to be moral. It's unreal that this is occurring so fast. I know a lot of folks have talked to me recently and said, man, our heads are spinning, Matt. This is way too much, way too fast, but this was predicted that this would happen. We just need to have people of principle and conviction in the right places. And God willing, they are raised up. And I know there are a bunch that have been. I'm going to highlight a few here in a moment. Also on the national front, once again, Hillary Clinton's emails beyond top secret. So now there has been the Inspector General, the State Department, Inspector General, the intelligence community have said what she did was illegal. Now the first report that came out on this issue, the first official report says what she did is crime. And she's still not in jail. And unbelievably, 70% of Democrats polled said that she should still run even if she was indicted. Even if she was indicted for committing crimes and allowing top secret information to be out there in the public sphere and hacked, she should still run for president of the United States. That is unreal to me. Also on the national front, kind of a disturbing article, but I think one that everybody needs to read. The National Public Radio finally admitted that there are companies working on animal-human hybrids, of course, for our own health and protection and safety, etc. But specifically, admitting that that is occurring, that they're actually mixing human and animal DNA in the embryonic stage to grow human and animal hybrids. It's real, folks. It's happening right before our eyes. And, you know, they kept this in the dark for a long time, called people conspiracy theorists, that said this is we should not go down this road. This is terrible. And yet they still continue to do it. Also on the national front, And if you haven't seen this article, you need to check it out as well. But there was some text snuck into a Senate bill that would give the FBI warrantless access to all emails. And so they're going to legalize what is clearly unconstitutional. And it's not only unconstitutional at the federal level, it's unconstitutional at the state level. We have a right at the state level under Article 1, Section 7, a right to privacy in our personal affairs. And that cannot happen if our emails are being warrantlessly collected. Second, at the federal level, unconstitutional, very clearly, because we are supposed to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures in our effects. Now, the founding fathers knew that they couldn't think of everything, so they added the catch-all at the end, our effects. And effects was supposed to cover everything. That was the known English language at that time. And I think that our emails are our effects. I mean, if somebody came into your house today, went through your filing cabinet, took a bunch of files out and walked out the door, you would be up in arms. You'd say, you can't do that. In fact, most of you listening to Patriot Radio, I would think, would stop them at the front door armed. How is it any different that they can go through your email files than your filing cabinet? It's no different. And I have a lot of people say to me that you don't really have a response to, well, this is a matter of national security. And yes, I do. The Constitution was written in emergencies for emergencies, and cannot be eviscerated, ignored in emergency. And that was the whole point behind it. It was to constrain governments in those most critical times when the exigency of the circumstance would tend to sway the hearts of people and say, oh, well, we just got to ignore it this one time and do it because we gotta keep our country safe. But the fact of the matter is, and I want to hit this head on, the fact of the matter is, our intelligence agencies are lazy, and their policies are lazy. And I'm not talking about the people on the ground who have done a phenomenal job, but the leadership is lazy. They have not given the resources to develop human intelligence. They have relied too much on signals intelligence and electronic intelligence, and this is the lazy part of it. Well, we just can't develop our human intel resources, so we're just going to get everybody's email. It just makes it a lot easier. Folks, when you run intelligence agencies, you should be developing human intelligence. That is one of the most accurate, one of the most important, and one of the most effective ways of getting intelligence. And yet, the leaders in some of these agencies are lazy. And that's where we see this warrantless access to email. And again, I am not challenging the folks on the ground. I've met them. I know some of them. They do tremendous work with little to no acknowledgement, little to no resources. They do a great job. But the fact of the matter is, we need to put the resources toward developing human intelligence overseas and quit this lazy approach to intelligence gathering that completely eviscerates the Constitution. We know better than that. We are better than that. Which brings us to the robot bee on the national front, big as a quarter. And the article that talks about this at Mashable.com very specifically brings up the fact that this can be used to spy. Well, yeah, it can be used to eavesdrop. That technology is there now, especially as nanotechnology is being continues to be developed. These robot bees are going to get smaller, and they can turn into listening devices. I'm sure eventually they will be able to retrofit them with cameras if they have not already. They will retrofit them to be able to collect DNA samples. So we need to talk about this now. Does the Constitution mean what it says? Are we secure in our effects and in our person, in our private affairs, as the state Constitution says? I would hope so. And lastly, on the national front, the movie Vaxxed is out, V-A-X-X-E-D. and talks about the whistleblower, Dr. Thompson, who has shown that the CDC report, which he worked on, intentionally played down the association of the MMR, that's three live attenuated viruses, in a vaccine given between the ages of 12 months and 18 months, dramatically increased the risk of autism. So they're trying to hide that fact. And again, are we, and then there's this push for mandatory vaccines, especially in the state of Washington in the last couple of years. Are we secure in our persons and effects? It seems like every issue goes to this. Every issue. So we need leaders that understand these things in places where they can do something about it. It's critical. Absolutely critical. So on the regional front, the recall of Judge Grasty continues in Harney County, Oregon. Kudos to the folks down there. It's now a validated recall effort to throw out Judge Grasty, the man who lied to sitting state legislators, and that lie resulted in the death of Lavoy Finicum. And this is what we got to do across the country, folks. The status quo can't stand. We have got to take these folks out of power and put people in that are people of principle. Also on the regional front, God and Country Celebration up in Marble, Washington, June 24th through 26th, the largest gathering of patriots in the year. Again, June 24th through 26th up in Marble, Washington. You can check out God and Country Celebration on Facebook and also on the web. And look forward to seeing everybody up there. Great time of fellowship and to learn and network. Just phenomenal time. Also on the regional front, the video Counties in Crisis is out. A great primer of what's going on throughout the country and also the history behind what's been happening. I think we missed that part of it, the fact that, counties actually had a lot of power at the founding of the country. So check out that video. On the local front, I want to highlight a couple people running for office. The first, Mike Volz in the 6th Legislative District, a tried and true constitutional conservative, very well respected by everybody in the community, running to fill that seat. I think he'd be a great team member. He is a CPA. He's worked in investments as the deputy treasurer here of Spokane County. And that's really what we're going to need in Olympia when we take the majority next year in the House of Representatives with the Republicans. We're going to need somebody with that expertise helping us with the budget to pare it all down back to what it should be, not increasing the size and scope of budget in the government, and also getting a handle on the state debt, which we never talk about, but is a huge problem as we approach over $60 billion in unfunded liabilities into the future, and our budget continues to balloon. So Mike Volz running for the 6th Legislative District, a great candidate. If you don't know him, go on the web, check him out, and show him your support if you feel so inclined. If not, check everybody out and see and get involved, because that is what is critical. Also on the local front, Dr. David DeWolf. Now, David DeWolf was a professor at Gonzaga University when I went there to the law school, and he literally wrote the book on tort law and contract law in Washington State. Two entire manuals called Washington Practice are used by lawyers throughout Washington State. He is running for the Washington State Supreme Court against Justice Yu. Now, Dr. DeWolf is going to need help because this is the first time in at least 8 years we have viable candidates for the Washington State Supreme Court. And Dr. DeWolf, his curriculum vitae, his entire life, he's more qualified than virtually everybody on the Supreme Court to be on the Supreme Court. I mean, literally, the guy wrote the book. So, again, very high qualified candidates coming out of the woodwork this year. We need to make sure we support them, tell our friends and family, especially in Western Washington, and our friends here to get out the vote and not just vote at the top of the ticket for president, but vote down the ticket for these important judicial positions. You know, when the Washington State Supreme Court stepped over the line with McCleary, we only have ourselves to blame. We need to make sure that we get good candidates elected who are people of principle. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. And remember also that if you get a chance, pray for the radio show, pray for us that are in the freedom fight, and consider joining it yourselves. And one of the ways that you can help out in the freedom fight is at your keyboard. Go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family, help us get over 5,000 likes on Patriot Radio, and help us to go viral so we can get this message of freedom and liberty out to everyone that is involved in the freedom fight and who should be involved in the freedom fight. And also remember, this is a listener-supported show. You can go to VoteShea.com. And if you donate to the campaign, that's what keeps us on the air here at Patriot Radio. And thank you to everybody that has been supporting us. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce my very good friend, Steve McLaughlin, the head of Liberty Disaster Relief Services, consultant, 25-year Navy veteran, and more importantly, one of the most qualified candidates in recent memory on the Republican side running for Lands Commissioner. Steve, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Thank you, Matt. It's good to be here.
So we talk about the public lands and all this stuff, but first I want to just get to your background because I think we kind of miss this a lot of times. We have really well-qualified people running for office, but you've got a background that I think puts you head and shoulders above anybody else that's even thought about running for Lands Commissioner in the last 8 years. So if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a native of the Pacific Northwest. I was born in Washington State. I grew up down in Oregon. I attended University of Oregon, where I received a degree in health and biology. And following that, I went into the Navy. And during my time in the Navy, I was essentially in leadership roles from, you know, my very first job all the way through my last job. And one of the things that I had the pleasure of doing in the Navy was we had a 5,000-acre area near Arlington, Washington, in the kind of west side of the North Cascades, that I got to manage and watch and learn a lot about lands management and forestry. And I initiated an effort there to preserve some old growth forests in the name of our forester, who became a very good friend of mine. But we employed, in not only did we, you know, preserve this land permanently, the other thing we did is we opened up the forest for access for recreational purposes, and we did some really good logging practices up there and had this very healthy forest. And so, you know, if you took a look at my qualifications, it's leadership. I've worked on ranches as a kid. I served my time in the Navy as a leader, and I have managed public lands before. So I don't think any other candidate has that resume.
Well, very clearly not. In fact, some are kind of the antithesis of what you just said, not mentioning names, of course. But I do want to bring up the fact that the Department of Natural Resources manages over 2.2 million acres of state trust land. And that is a significant chunk of the state of Washington, is it not?
It is. And in addition to that 2.2 million, they manage 12 million acres of other resources. So it's a big chunk of the state.
So in recent years, we have had a lot of wildfires out there, and you and I have talked privately about some of the problems that are out there. And one of them is we just lock this forest land up. We do not log it. We let the fuel load build up. We let the roads go into disrepair, and we have these catastrophic wildfires that really shouldn't be happening. They're going to happen. Fires are going to happen, but we should be able to stop them if we managed our forests better. What would you do as Lands Commissioner to make that happen?
First thing I'd do is I would take the padlock off the forest, and I would get in there and remove fuels thin to the appropriate tree loading per acre in these forests, while protecting not only the environment and endangered species, but also water quality. But we need to get in there and make our forests healthy again, and they are not healthy. Number two is I want to initiate a training program to allow ranchers, farmers, and those who live in those rural forested areas the opportunity to conduct initial attack. I also want local fire jurisdictions to get in and have the capability of doing an initial attack. And then on the response side, I want to speed up the response cycle by tearing down jurisdictional boundaries between federal land managers, and you heard me say managers, not owners, and state and local fire managers. So we can get in and attack the fire in an integrated manner that speeds the process. And then the other thing on initial response is cue aerial assets sooner rather than later if we can do that. So that's my plan there. The bottom line is we're going to stop these catastrophic fires, period. And I'm qualified to do that.
Here's one of the great parts about that. That would actually reduce our CO2 emissions by 24 million tons per year. There's 92 million overall CO2 being emitted into the atmosphere every year in Washington State. And the governor's plan is to reduce by only 18 million over 18 years. So actually, you managing forests would be the greatest thing for the environment in the history of Washington State.
And you know what? A table, to many people, comes from IKEA or from some retailer. Most tables come from wood. Wood is sequestered carbon. If we get in and work the forests and have healthy, sustainable harvests, we are sequestering carbon in addition to preventing it from going up in smoke, which, you know, it in the last summer, it cost us human lives. It cost us countless, you know, hundreds of millions in lost property. It cost us livestock. It cost us forests. And it cost us wildlife. And, you know, on average, there are 4 game animals per acre in the forest. So if you think about the number of acres that we lost last summer alone, not to mention the Carlton fire, multiply that by 4, and that's about how many animals we killed. Tell me that those environmental lockup practices are of any use whatsoever. I think they're invalid.
So what specifically could the Lands Commissioner do, especially to open up the roads, because that's really key to fire response, open up the roads, but still be environmentally friendly? Because I know there's people that try to say you can't open roads up because that'll destroy the environment. That I don't really buy that. I think you can do things in a balance. What would your plan be to specifically do those things and actually make it happen so people would have trust again in how our lands are being managed here in the state of Washington?
Well, DNR has a program for road building that is actually responsible, if believe it or not. What we could do is you look at where your road is going to be sited in the first place, and you take advantage of doing the best you can to keep it out of stream buffer areas, and you also watch where you're locating the road with respect to slide-prone areas. Now, you know, landslides on the west side of the state are major issues that we have to contend with. And so, you know, the way you build the road, and I'm not a civil engineer, so I don't know much about road building, but you just site it in places where you can have the access, but you're not putting unnecessary or unwanted materials into our waters. And water quality is critical because it has much, you know, more profound impact than just you know, forest, streams, and fisheries. What about aquatic life in the sound, et cetera? We need to watch that.
And I think a lot of people miss the fact that the Lands Commissioner actually is responsible for the aquatic preserves and reserves that exist and some of the management of that area as well.
Yes, as well as regulatory functions and managing the state schools trust.
So there are a lot of people that have been really fed up with the way that bureaucrats have been treating people. And this is predominantly at the federal level with the BLM and the National Forest folks, Forest Service. And then also you always have somebody complaining about the Department of Fish and Wildlife, at least in my ear. So how can you turn DNR and turn the attitude of an agency back to where it really should be, and that is one of service for the people?
It does appear that we've entered into this period of adversarial relationships between the Forest Service and the BLM. And I've seen that firsthand with some a leased cabin that my family owns in Southern Oregon, where we were, you know, the work with us and the Forest Service has been adversarial for the last 15 years, and it's unnecessary. I fully understand the frustrations that we saw by the Bundys and Lavoie and others down in Malheur with the way they've been treated by the way the Hammonds were treated by the BLM, and certainly the way Clive and Bundy was treated. You know, that has to stop. And shortly after the standoff at Malheur occurred, Greg Walden, who was a congressman in that district, did echo those frustrations, and I agree with him. We got to stop the adversarial relationship.
So how can you do that? As you know, because bureaucracies are so large. I mean, how would you try to at least attempt to make that happen as lands commissioner?
One of the things I have on my early agenda as lands commissioner is to call all the forest supervisors and BLM supervisors that manage federal lands in the state together for a conference. And I want to explore ways to be more collaborative and to stop the adversarial work that we've seen. And this has had a terrible effect on our small rural communities in this state. And it's time for that to stop.
So there is a huge push nationally now, and it looks like Donald Trump has jumped on board and endorsed transferring the control of federal lands back to the states where I believe constitutionally they belong. What is your stance on that? And you would be one of the people that would actually have to absorb the management of that if it came back down to the states, at least initially. How would you see doing that as DNR right now?
This is I've thought about this a lot. And given the amount of federal lands, and I would put national parks off limits on that, by the way, but BLM and Forest Service lands, if we brought that back under state control, it is my opinion that first we do it in a measured manner, and we start with a county in the state, if we're going to do this, and study it and use one county as the example and see how it moves forward from there. And it's got to be measured, because I recall in the early 90s when West Germany absorbed East Germany's economy into the Federal Republic of Germany, the problems that they faced. And I believe that we might face the same problems initially. And so it's got to be something that's very measured.
It does have to be very measured, I think, because otherwise, it turns chaotic.
Yeah.
But access to public lands, and you kind of alluded to this, you know, people love parks. I love parks. I go hiking. I know you're an avid outdoorsman. How would you see opening up actually some more trails and maybe some more roads to recreation? What is your view on that, and how would you see that happening as lands commissioner?
I'm a firm believer that our public lands are places to recreate, because, you know, wilderness areas and the forested areas that some people don't have, where they don't always have access to trails if they're disabled or whatever. You know, the wilderness is a cleansing place. And I think, you know, I don't buy into this notion that keeping people out will prevent fires. I think putting people in the forest where people are taking care of the lands that they're walking on and camping on is going to do more to stop fires. So I believe in opening it up. You know, there's nothing more fun than going camping in the woods with your family. I just, you know, it's one of those things that I hold dear to me. And to have somebody tell me I can't do it is unfathomable, especially on lands that you and I both own.
Well, and I find it interesting, too, that low-income families particularly, that's one of the greatest ways that they can actually go on vacation, go camping, recreate, because it doesn't cost as much as it does to go, you know, buy a hotel or all that and buy airplane tickets. They can just go out in the woods and actually recreate. And this opening lands up more to the access for our low-income families in Washington State actually would be a good thing.
I think it will, too.
Do
and
you
I want to see people out there.
Well, I think we all do. I mean, I love on your Facebook page, you got a picture, I think it's with your grandson, you know, out there showing him how to work a compass in the woods. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I grew up doing. Have we lost that as Americans?
I sure hope not. And if so, it's time to take it back and reinstill those values in our youth. I think it's critical to our health and well-being in this country.
Now, you're a veteran, 25 years in the Navy. Memorial Day was yesterday, and I would like you, if you could, tell your own story about being a veteran and what it means to you as well, and just the service, not only to your country, but service to the memory of those fallen sailors that you probably knew.
Well, I've known a lot of people that have fallen, and in this particular day, yesterday was the first Memorial Day since my father passed. And so I took that day for him yesterday. But, you know, in the past, I stop and pray for every veteran and everyone who has ever fallen or been injured who has gone before, that sacrificed for all of us and made this country what it is. And it pains me to see people taking our sacrifices for granted. You know, I wish people had a better understanding of what it is that a soldier, sailor, airman, and a Marine does for their country. It's important.
Well, and I think, too, on that note, you've trained nearly 1,000 firefighters and public safety personnel in incident management. And these catastrophic wildfires, we've lost firefighters as a result of mismanagement of our public lands. And yet you've actually trained them. How would you help recognize their memory as well? And what would be some of the things that you would really like to – and you talked about – you know, doing some conferences and trying to streamline the integration for fire and incident response. But how would you specifically maybe train firefighters differently, or would there be some things that you would do along that line?
You know, I think there probably is something that we can do to enhance training. You know, one of the reasons that a lot of the firefighters are killed is they get into situations that they can't get out of. And I was reading about the Prescott firefighters that were killed down in Arizona a couple of years ago. And, you know, they got stuck in a thicket of brush that they couldn't get in out of, and fire had just, it consumed them. And, you know, I think the key is resurrecting, if, you know, safety measures and developing a culture of situational awareness and a culture of safety. Every time you're out in the woods, I mean, you know, when I go in the woods every day on my own property and on the bordering DNR land, I still, you know, am fully aware of what's going on around me and ready to have an escape route. But, you know what can kill you, know what can get you in trouble, and always have an escape route. And, you know, it's hard to really say what each circumstance is that caused these deaths. But, you know, accountability for your people, culture of safety, and situational awareness is key, I think.
Well, in dovetailing into Memorial Day and remembering the fallen, I mean, there have been firefighters here in Washington State that have fallen as well. Is there anything that you've thought about along that line of remembering their sacrifice? Because I think a lot of times they get forgotten, especially. You know, a couple years later, nobody can really name who the firefighters were that did die in Washington State.
Well, perhaps it is time to, you know, recognize firefighters as, you know, part of the clan who risks their lives every day, you know, for public safety. just like a soldier or a police officer or a sheriff's deputy. You know, I think those wildland firefighters and urban firefighters deserve the same honor. And, you know, they're risking their lives for us.
They are.
You got to remember them.
I agree. Well, I want to shift gears here a little bit, but first, this is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, with Steve McLaughlin, 25-year Navy veteran, running for lands commissioner, somebody who actually has managed public lands before, who has trained people on incident response, firefighters included, and probably the most qualified guy in at least a decade, if not more, that has run for lands commissioner on the Republican ticket. So, Steve, the Costco Connection came out here a couple weeks ago with a poll in regards to rewilding and this idea that we should turn previously developed areas back into wild areas. What is your thought on the whole idea of rewilding, especially since there's quite a push to do this in eastern Washington?
Jury's out on that one, but I think the problem that we're looking at here is it a certain group of people that wants to just lock up the lands, or is it in fact something that does make good sense? My initial response to that is, okay, what opportunity costs do we face by rewilding? Does it remove our access to the forest? Does it decrease our ability to log? Does it take away our opportunity to go hunting in the fall? What is this going to do to us? What's it going to do to game populations? I know in Idaho, for example, you know, there's a rewilding there has had some significant opportunity costs. Diminished elk herds and the like. So it's something that if it's going to be done, it has to be done very, very carefully. And there's got to be a lot of public involvement.
And it seems like, too, you know, it's really easy for folks maybe, and I can say this since I live in eastern Washington, but it's easy for folks in downtown Seattle to say, you know, we're going to lock up parts of eastern Washington because they don't live here. And I think a lot of ranchers and farmers are getting a little bit, you know, they're getting a little bit fed up with it because they know that ranchers and farmers actually manage the land better than if you just let it go back into its state of nature and let the fuel loads build up.
That was the Hammond's argument altogether in Oregon, and it's my argument as well. And in July, early July, I'll be going up into Okanagan County and touring private lands that are managed extremely responsibly as compared to lands that were purchased by environmental groups that have gone to waste. And to be fair, we'll look at good and bad logging practices, and then we'll see, you know, what were the real causes of the fire. So I look forward to that trip. And that'll really paint a picture. But, you know, something I despise is when somebody comes up to me and tells me how to live my own life on my own lands, or somebody that moves into our state to tell us and then tries to tell us how we should do it by bringing their own old ways with them and those ways that they probably left where they came from for. So, you know, it's just interesting times.
So one of your, I think, big pluses and advantages is you have a lot of experience in incident management, incident response, and you actually have been a part of Liberty Disaster Relief Services, which during the wildfires brought a lot of supplies into the areas that need it directly, and there was no government help. It was you actually doing it. So if you could tell the listeners a little bit about that organization and also the whole idea behind it. And how much you actually did in relief, because I think a lot of people don't know.
Well, I was surprised to find out how much we actually did. last summer, we put a team of folks together to go in and help rebuild homes and do ranch cleanup and debris cleanup from the Carlton fire. And from that, one of the problems that we came across is we didn't have a way to get charitable contributions. So we're in the process of completing the formation of Liberty Disaster Relief Services to be able to raise money and also create equipment caches across the state that can be used for disaster relief that are tailored to each region. And the thing that really surprised me is we got a request from a very good friend of mine, who I think I'm talking to on the phone right now, for relief supplies as soon as possible. And I've been reporting that we shipped in 7 days, we raised 12 tons. That's 24,000 pounds. I was way wrong. We shipped from Lewis County 12 tons that we raised in 7 days. From Whatcom County, we shipped an additional 12 tons or 15 tons. And from Kitsap County, an additional 7 or 8 tons. So we're up, you know, closer now to 50,000 pounds or 60,000 pounds of relief supplies that we ship in 7 days' notice. The other thing that's great about what we did is we delivered these supplies direct to people who needed them. We didn't go through a processing center. We took them to the homes of people that required those supplies. And to me, that's what sets leaders apart from other, you know, relief organizations.
Well, and I love your statement, leadership is an action, not a position. And so if you had the opportunity as Lands Commissioner, how would you actually help in disaster relief?
Well, I think what we need to do in that area is one of the things I've been teaching in my incident management classes of late is focusing on recovery and asking, as you go through your development of objectives and strategies, what are my actions doing to facilitate recovery? And clearly, disaster relief for people affected by these disasters is a key to helping people recover. And, you know, the other piece that I think is important is incident managers often tend to discount volunteers as part of the game. And I believe that an incident organization should start putting volunteer groups into place that can help. And that happened up at OSO after the landslides a couple years ago. And, you know, at first they were trying to shut them out. And finally, loggers from the town of Darrington said, "You're telling us we can't put in a road?" Well, in the light of the moon, those loggers put a road in and stopped an 84-mile commute from Darrington back down to Arlington and returned it to a, you know, 18-mile commute. So volunteers and relief and recovery is important.
Very important. And I think that, you know, the local folks know the area better than anybody could at the state level. And relying on folks on the ground is something we got to get back to, that decentralization of response, because otherwise it takes too long. And where there's centralization, there's bureaucracy. And where there's bureaucracy, there's delays in responding. At least that's been my experience.
And if I could tell a quick story about that, I studied Katrina aftermath, and I went down to the Gulf Coast a few years ago after the storm, and the folks in Mississippi told me that there were three agencies that worked the problem. There was FEMA, there was MEMA, the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency, and there was REMA. And this was my favorite one. It's the Redneck Emergency Management Agency. And these people, after the storm, the chainsaws came out, they cleared their own streets. The barbecues came out, and they emptied their freezers first and worked through the perishable foods, and they took care of each other on a neighborhood basis. They also provided their own security to allow police and sheriff's deputies to do their jobs elsewhere as a result of the massive looting campaign that went on down there. And so it also, REMA, Redneck Emergency Management Agency, also enabled the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency to do their job. And I'm not going to talk about what happened with FEMA, but it turned out to be more like Soviet-style breadlines.
REMA. That is now going to become a household word. You know that, right?
I'm going to make it a household word in this state. REMA.
Local response, local control. Well, Stephen, the last few minutes that we got left, if you could, let the listeners know how they can get a hold of you, how they can support you, learn more about you as well.
Well, as you know, this is a statewide campaign, and I registered late for the campaign, and anything I could do in terms of getting your support, primarily financially now, and then letting us know what we can do to come out to your area to do a campaign event, or if you're interested in hosting an event, that would be greatly appreciated. This is a daunting task. I've never done this before, so I'm a rookie, and the learning curve is vertical. I can be reached now, probably by the end of the week. Our website will be up, and it's www.mac4lands.org. And my contact will be steve@mac4lands.org. If you send me an email, I'll try to respond every single time. But wait till Thursday or Friday. Matt, you have my normal email address, and feel free to contact me anytime, or if you need to put me in touch with somebody, please do.
Absolutely. Well, I want to end on this point. You have opponent, and well, one primary opponent. I always ask this question, so I hope I'm not catching you too off guard. What makes you different than your opponent? Why would you be better than your opponent? What's the contrast there?
I think the contrast is as follows. A, I have extensive leadership from deck plate to executive leadership and management experience. I have significant experience in crisis management, including incident management. And that is a set apart that no other candidate has, in my opinion. The other thing is, though it's a little limited, I do have public lands management experience. My philosophy towards this is to reach out and work collaboratively and try to solve some of these problems that we have without people running off to the courtroom to solve it.
And you have never run before. You're not part of any establishment or any existing structure. You're actually doing this new. So first address that. And second, why? Why now? Why run now?
First off, I'm a rookie at this, and I am learning every single day. And I'm trying to get smarter every single day on how to win. But I'm running because I care deeply for this stake. I care deeply for the people of Washington. And I know that with my experience in leading a large organization and in resolving crisis and diverse opinions, that I can do this job and I can do it well. And I can create jobs within the rural communities in our state, and I can perhaps lower our tax burden by getting money back to the schools for school construction instead of having to vote for it. And I think I can help lower taxes by responsible, land use and fire management. Bottom line, we're going to stop these catastrophic fires. We're going to put the money that we generate in revenue back where it belongs, and I'm going to lead the people of DNR instead of let them be unhappy and look for other jobs.
Now, you are going to be in Spokane Valley at La Bella Vie Event Center on the 23rd of June as well. So that's coming up here soon,
yep.
But you're actually going to be over here, and I know you'd like to have a lot of folks there as well.
I sure would. And I'll be at Marble. And I'll be out, at least one other time before the primary, if at all possible. And I'll certainly come out between the primary and the general election.
So the 23rd of June at the assembly meeting out in Spokane Valley at La Bella Vie Event Center, and then also up at Marble, Washington, 24th through 26th June at the wonderful celebration they have up there for God and Country. Steve McLaughlin, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. I really appreciate everything you're doing. And if you could plug your Facebook page and website one last time.
Okay, the Facebook page is Steve McLaughlin for Lands Commissioner, and website is www.mac4lands.org, mac4lands.org. And thanks a lot, Matt, for having me on today, and God bless.
God bless you, Steve. Godspeed. Steve McLaughlin, running for Lands Commissioner, 25-year Navy veteran. Thank you for being on Patriot Radio with me today. We'll have you back on again soon, my friend. Well,
thank
if you,
sir.
Didn't
look forward to it.
If you didn't catch any of that, or you want to re-listen to any part of it, you know, we actually post this on Podbean, Matt Shea Podbean, and you can take a look at it there. It'll be up here in about 24 hours. I usually wait until after the replay tonight at 9 o'clock for people to listen. So if you want to check out Steve McLaughlin, you can see him at La Bella Vie Event Center on Barker Road, off of Barker Road and Sprague on the 23rd of June, and it's actually Appleway, excuse me, 23rd of June at the assembly meeting they're going to have out there. Again, La Bella Vie Event Center, just off Barker Road on the 23rd of June. We're up at the Marble Garden Country Celebration, 24th through 26th June, the largest gathering of Patriots during the year. Please check out Steve McLaughlin. We really do need a public lands commissioner who understands decentralization and streamlining of incident response, especially concerning our forest fires and forest management. My goodness gracious, it's been horrible here the last couple of years. Well, thank you, everybody, to listening to Patriot Radio today. This is Matt Shea. Remember to do everything you can to do everything you can. When I say everything, I mean it means everything, not just keyboards. Get involved at the local level in campaigns. Do everything you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.